You know, if you read the headlines, we would all worry what is going to happen to the traditional car dealer. Well, guess what? We've survived and we're bigger industry and better ran. And the normal car dealer is a better businessman today than what they were 10 years ago.
You're listening to Driving Performance, your go-to podcast for unmatched expertise in the world of buying and selling an automotive dealership. Each episode features discussions with industry leaders and is brought to you by Performance Brokerage Services, North America's premier family-owned automotive dealership brokerage firm with over 30 years of experience. We're here to ensure you gain the most reliable insights to confidently navigate a transaction and accomplish your unique goals. Whether you're looking to buy or sell, we prioritize building lasting relationships and maximizing the value beyond the transaction level. Here are your hosts, Jamie Farley and Paul Keckney, for another segment of Shifting Gears.
Welcome back to Driving Performance. I'm Jamie Farley with my co-host, Paul Keckney. Today, we're joined by someone who's been in the trenches helping dealers get their financial houses in order before big transitions. Travis Horton is a CPA and partner at HHM CPAs, which is a top 100 CPA and advisory firm nationwide, where he leads their dealership services group.
Yes, we are happy to have an expert on this subject. Travis works on everything from estate planning to buy-sell readiness. Travis, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's quite an honor as I was looking through the list of guests you've had in the past. So I will try to live up to some expectations.
Well, we're happy to have you on, Travis. And I think we should start with a topic that's top of mind for a lot of dealers. The estate tax laws are set to expire at the end of this year, 2025, but new legislation was just passed. Can you walk us through the updates and what this means for this year and for the long term as well?
Dealers got good news because obviously the estate laws were renewed and part of his tax bill. And so I think the fear of it was the gifting exemption was going to drop down from $15 million maybe to $3 million to $4 million per person. And so they're renewed. And so we do have the extension of time to allow $15 million per taxpayer, which is probably the biggest item that was pressing because those laws, as you said, were set to expire in December 31st of 25. And so with that being, you know, there was obviously a lot of pressure on dealers to get the ball moving, and some needed the pressure to probably get things moving, and some were probably doing it a little bit early than necessary just because they were afraid that they would lose out on those exemptions. And so now that we have some time, which will allow a little more strategic planning to go in place, because as we all know on here, that it's the one thing the dealers have to deal with that most business owners don't have to deal with when it comes into estate planning rules is they have a manufacturer that has to approve these transactions. So it takes a little bit longer to get them done. And plus the manufacturer has their own guidelines and strategic reasons and goals of what they will approve. So while we did get some time, as accountants, we're always going to push to kind of keep the ball moving. And hopefully that will, that we won't be the only ones singing that song. The other big item that I think will be of interest to dealers will be is obviously the bonus depreciation rules now have been renewed. And so the bonus depreciation was down to 40%. Now it's back to 100%. And why that is important in mine and your world is obviously for our clients buying stores, their ability to write off a whole bunch more as depreciation now is back to where it was a few years ago. So when you're valuing deals and you're looking at cash flows and you're able to take a pretty sizable deduction in the first 12 months or the first calendar year, I should say, that's significant. And so those two items right off the bat, I think will make a big difference in how dealers are looking forward the next few years. And the good news with the estate planning rules is those are permanent changes as of right now. So it's a big win for everybody. The other item that I would mention to the group would be is obviously there's been some interest limitation rules that have been in place over the last 2 years, and why that is important for our dealer clients who are buying stores and have floor plan, you know, those interest deductions were getting limited in some cases. It looks like in 2026, not in 25, but in 2026, some of those limitations will be reduced or completely released. And so it's going to help probably with some clients make some acquisitions. So between the tax savings on depreciation and being able to write off all the interest, I think it's going to create a little more happy buyers.
So it's funny you say permanent, but for now, which can be a little bit confusing for the estate tax. So how do you guide or advise dealers?
Well, as presidents change, they will redo. So when Trump was in office the first time, he set these rules to expire 12/31/25. And I think to avoid the panic, I think this time he's trying to set some things as more of the permanent items to come through. And so, and you always have to leave a little bit of wiggle room because obviously as the political elected officials change, they can change things. And so in my mind, we know probably good for a few years. And so we will do our best to push as much as we can to take advantage of the current situations. And look, the manufacturers have been really flexible in approving things in advance of actually doing them. So in other words, you know, submitting plans of what you want to do for their permission, but not exercising those plans until a later date. I think they've been very supportive and really appreciative. So if nothing else, get your plan, get it submitted, and making sure that you have something that the manufacturer will approve.
You work with a lot of dealers, I'm sure, that are in their 60s, 70s. Heck, we even see some in their 80s that are finally making that call to divest and possibly retire. When it comes to estate planning, what gets in the way? Is it a fear of losing control? Is it a fear of not knowing where to start? What do you see from that perspective?
It's a tough discussion, and there's no really great answers because it's a little bit different, but I'm going to say there's two things that I see that are common. One is not being important. If you're a local dealer in your community, whether it be the size of even Atlanta or a small town in Mississippi, right? You're an important part of their economy. You employ a lot of people. You spend money advertising. And I think when you do not own that store anymore, no matter how much money you sold that store for, you are not as important. And I think most of them have seen their friends go through that. And I know that's ego, and we all have them. And so that, to me, is one of the biggest hindrances they have to work through. Are they truly ready to let go? Because so many over the years have said, hey, I'm going to get out. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to volunteer more. And they quickly realize they are not that important when they don't have that revenue dollars to support. The other part of it is, as you said, look, is maintaining some level of control is important to most of these guys. They've bet on themselves for a long period of time, and it's hard to let go of those, the control, and allowing other people to drive the ship. And it's a battle that we all have to make, right, with all our businesses, whether it be the CPA firm or whether it be auto dealerships, and to come through. And so it is something that we're constantly pushing and trying to have alternative plans if something doesn't work. But we're going to see, as we talked earlier, we're going to have a big push just because of age alone, nothing else. A ton of transactions to be a part of and to work on and hopefully plan successfully with.
We don't know each other very well, Travis, but I will tell you, when I was a Chevy dealer and a Ford dealer, when I sold, I went through, I'd call it a 6-month dark period. You know, it was a dark part of my life. And I like to tell dealers, if you can get through that 6 months, there's life after the car business. There really is. But it is a challenge. It's a good 6 months of trying to figure out, hey, the phone's not ringing and I'm not that important. And it does take a little time but there is life after retail car business.
Losing your identity is tough. I don't care who you are. And for most of our clients have been in your role, right? It's your identity. It's what you've done every day. And we struggle with this conversation quite a bit. And for some of them, they're the first person there in the morning, and they're sometimes the last person to leave. And I think they feel that they would die if they didn't have that pressure. I've toyed around with the thought, and I'll be curious what you thought is go ahead and engage a broker. Go ahead and get everything teed up that if you do not want to let it go right now, go ahead and get everything signed and contract upon your death, or if you're in the hospital and you're not able to make those decisions that you need to make, go ahead and get everything engaged and worked on and done. So therefore, your spouse or your kids are not having to deal with those issues at the same time. I've had no successful takers, but I've been preaching that a lot lately. And I think I will have some of those that will actually go down that path here in the next 12 months. And because they enjoy going to the store every day still. And it's no longer a financial decision, right? It's a life decision. And so once they reach a certain level of financial success, I think it's more about what they want to do with the remaining time on earth. And so have you seen anything like that in the past?
Well, here's what I will tell you. I've gotten the dealer body after 10 years. And of course, I've been in the car business for 40 years. I've got many dealers today that when I go into their office and I sit down and I know them well, they'll say, hey, by the way, I've got one of your business cards here beside my bed. And my wife knows that if something happens to me, she's supposed to pick up the phone and call you. So,
and I'm trying to take it one step farther where there's no debate, because unfortunately, we've all seen where somebody's passed away or been hospitalized and the vultures come out and everybody has an agenda. So in my mind, hey, let's remove all the agendas. You put your agenda with your family and execute it, and we'll see. But I think we will see more of that as some of these guys enjoy going to the store every day and being part of the team.
I've got to imagine, too, just the process and the paperwork can seem very daunting to dealers. And it's like, well, it takes time and it takes an investment to make sure it gets done. But at the same time, waiting until it's too late is not good for anyone. So the earlier you can start, the better. That's always what we've preached.
Yeah, we've seen some families over the years completely just fall apart when the family patriarch dies. And that's what you have to avoid, right? You do not want to get in a situation where when that person passes or is not able to come to work every day and things are forced to change. We have families that no longer talk to each other. We have families that they don't spend Christmas together anymore because either the plan was different than what everybody expected or there was no plan done and it created a lot of infighting, and you don't want that. That's the worst case scenario, and that's what you're trying to avoid. And so if you're going to wait, my goal is to wait with the plan. Like, the plan's already done. We can wait for some triggering events, but let's take out all the unknowns.
So let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the marketplace right now. I know some brands are having a dip in earnings. Some are still doing very, very well. This could potentially be a strategic advantage for valuations and gifting. Why? I just want to get your thoughts. Why is now actually a smart time to act, especially for those dealers with some who own some brands that maybe are not performing as well as they have in the past?
I've been doing this for 26 years. And so some of the estate planning I've done over the years, in particular, we're talking about 2008 and 2009, I looked really smart. And I wish in everything I've done, I can always make those statements. And I bring all that up because obviously we have some brands that are not performing well. And so if you go back in 2008, 2009, that was the last period where we had some significant change in valuations. And for a lot of our clients, we took advantage of that time to make some transfers, some gifting, bringing other owners, using some trust, just a laundry list of things that we use to either accomplish ownership transitions or just succession and tax issues. And I think we're in that now, right? And so you don't hate to pick on too many brands, but if you're a Chrysler store or you're a Nissan store right now, obviously the valuations for those stores are much different than what they have been over since really 2008 and 9, in my opinion. So in my mind, for our clients who have a series of those stores, we are certainly encouraging them to look at it and do some transitions, just because I'm not one that believes they're not going to be here. I think both of those brands will rebound. And I think it's, if I'm a buyer, it's the right time to buy those stores. And so take advantage of this if you're going to keep them and use your gifting exemption. And obviously there's, with the valuations of those stores being as low as they are, your gifting exemption can go a long ways. And there's probably some other brands you can get into. You could probably get into Hyundai a little bit right now. Hyundai's obviously has come down a little bit more than some of the other brands. You could get into the domestics, in my opinion, are kind of middle ground. And so everybody has an opinion of what the earnings are going to be over the next 12 to 24 months. If me and you knew those answers, we would know how to invest in the stock market for sure. But in my mind, you got to keep an eye on those things. But you have to have a plan to be able to execute on those things. And so it goes back to your first question or comment is, hey, don't wait and to the last minute and getting through. So in my mind, you're formulating a plan. There are some basic things that you know you're going to do. And if those stores' valuations right now are less than what you think they will be in the future, those are the first assets you should be reviewing and going through. On a similar topic, stores that you've recently bought that you've leveraged maybe more so than you typically do, obviously the values of those stores are also less. And so we also look at those transactions, right? And so it's not just about market values for the stores you just purchased. It's the net book value. So it's the goodwill that they recently purchased, less the debt they financed. And that debt could be owner debt. It could be bank debt. could be reinsurance advances, all of those things that will bring the values of those stores down, that you should be considering looking at those transactions. Because obviously, if you wait 5 or 10 years and you pay down all the debt relative to those stores, your gifting exemption doesn't go too far.
So for dealers that have that mentality, it's going to be worth more next year, or I just want it one more year, 2 more years. What's the danger that comes into play here? I mean, I've seen it where pre-COVID, guys felt pretty smart hanging on through to their stores through COVID. And of course, now we're post-COVID. And now they're like, gosh, I should have sold right at post-COVID. So what's the danger in your mind of continually hanging on?
Accountants struggle with this concept because we all live in little fear that the world is going to end. You guys have been around a while. So if you go back in time, you had Tesla, he was going to ruin our industry. You had CarMax, who was going to ruin the industry. You had Carvana, who was going to ruin the industry. You know, you had manufacturers at one point early on in my career were buying stores, right? And so we've had a lot of different variables that have entered our space that if you read the headlines, we would all worry, you know, what is going to happen to the traditional car dealer. Well, guess what? We've survived and we're bigger industry and better ran. And the normal car dealer is a better businessman today than what they were 10 years ago, right? And so they're true entrepreneurs, in my opinion. So as accountants, we focus in on all those things, and it does motivate us to push that, hey, you never know what it's going to be. It's a good time to sell. And outside of a few periods in my life, every deal that I said no to, COVID obviously proved me wrong on, right? And I get reminded by some of our clients that, hey, you told us not to buy that one. So yeah, I gave you a little, I guess, history comment on that. But, you know, at the end of the day, look, we've gone through this period of time where earnings have been exponential. And who would have ever said that new car grosses was going to go up like they did, right? And then we had the spike of used car grosses, too, because there was no new vehicles. And so we've gone through this period of time where, hey, it doesn't make sense. It did not equal out to what we thought. So obviously, some of our clients sold out over the last few years, but during the COVID period, as we were winding down, and they feel pretty good about what they've done, right? Because earnings have dropped. And so they're still excited. They think they made the right decisions. And we've had others, like you said, that now say, we probably should have done this because now it's hard to sell cars and make money and make gross. And some of them have forgotten how to do it. So they've lost people and they're not used to having to suck customers into the store and work those angles. And so they're having to recreate themselves, and some of them are up to the challenge and some of them aren't. So I think not only do we have an aging group dealer body that's going to exit, I think we're going to have guys who say, you know what, I don't want to fight that battle, right? And they're going to exit. So that's why I think really over the next 12 to 24 months, most of us were all down a little bit in the first half of this year as transaction volume, but I think it's going to be exponential going forward over the next period of time. And so we'll see, and it will come to a balancing point in my mind in that period of time.
Yeah, no, that's a really good perspective on that. One of the things that we talk to dealers about is getting their financial house in order. From your side of the table, what does that mean as a CPA? And maybe you could highlight one or two things that are really important.
Well, when you're valuing, you know, I know we're sometimes on opposite sides of the transactions, and you get a well put together package of information, and it goes through and it has all these add backs and the things that you're trying to consider. And, you know, if it's a big deal, those things to that dealer, it probably doesn't matter as much. So if you're talking about a $20 to $30 million goodwill number, that dealer who's buying that is probably pretty sophisticated, using his own pro formas and his own model, what he's going to do. And if he's buying a store like that, the cash doesn't matter as much. But if you go down to you're doing a $5 or $10 million goodwill transaction, the guy who's buying that may be stretching. He may not have as much liquidity in the bank. And so he's needing more financing, and having a cleaned up set of dealership financial statements and showing all the income certainly helps when you're going to a prospective bank for the buyer to help leverage the transaction. And so I tell everybody that, hey, if you're going to go down this process of looking to sell, in a perfect world, you'd love to have a few years to plan for that event. And we're going to collapse some income. We're going to take the override and what we call the mailbox money. We're going to run it through the stores. We're going to look at payroll that's not essential. And we're going to look at family members who are on payroll that do not serve a operational function inside the store, or they're either overpaid. And we're going to try to correct those things. So when we get into dealing with you guys to go to market it, we want to give the best set of dealership financial statements and the fewest amount of add backs that we can to kind of show a clean set of books and hopefully a tax return that doesn't veer too off from this. Because there's nothing worse than when you have a dealership financial statement that shows $1 million of profit, and then you get to the tax return and it shows $500,000 loss, right? And going to a lender for the buyer on that perspective and working that angle and trying to show all the add backs, it makes it harder. And I think that even gets really hard when you're going into these smaller market stores where you're talking about $1 million goodwill or $3 million goodwill, and the best buyer is the guy in your town. And, you know, and for him to pull that off, he's going to have a lender who's going to be in that, want to be in that market. And so having all these things cleaned up and worked through and showing profits makes it a lot easier. Because I spend quite a bit of time helping our clients refinance or refinance and leverage transactions. So when I have that opportunity, it makes it a lot easier.
So Travis, I've got dealers over the years that have made this comment, and I'd really like to get your take on this. I've got dealers that say, you know, I don't like to pay tax at the end of the year, so I write all my used cars down, and therefore I pay less tax, or maybe parts or whatever. So they do a big write down. So they say, you know, I don't want you to look at December financials, take a look at November financials. And in my experience, I look at it and say, yeah, well, you do it year over year, and therefore it's not really an add back, and we really truly have to look at December, not November, because the reality is that used car, that part, whatever you wrote down, if you sold it in January, February, March, April, whenever, you then took it in as profit the following year. I'd like your take on that just for some of those dealers that do that, because in my mind, it's really, your true statement is still December, isn't it?
Yeah. I tell everybody, no bank asks for a November statement, right? You know, and so they ask for December. So that is your glamour shot, as I refer to it in the office. And so we plan for our clients, especially the clients who are trying to buy, right? If they're trying to buy stores, hey, your ability to borrow on your current stores and on the store that you're trying to buy. And so we need to give the truest and best picture. So we're obviously not fans of taking these massive used vehicle adjustments. We're not fans of, you know, if you're going to make charitable contributions, make those charitable contributions personally. Don't do it through your business. And so you're doing all these things to create the best image you can for your store for December, because no, like I said, is ideal if you're the buyer and you're trying to use and show the manufacturer, or maybe it's the manufacturer that doesn't even know who you are. You know, manufacturers like to work with successful dealers. And so in my mind, and if you're the seller, to your point, that look, hey, it goes back to the same thing. Hey, if you're going to make it easier for that prospective buyer to be able to pull this transaction and have your ducks in a row, then it's great. The other part that's not related to transactions and why I preach this so often is, hey, a good balance sheet, maybe it's your floor plan lender, right? It's your floor plan lender that you're trying to renew up, and all those adjustments makes it hard on them. So most of these guys are pretty comfortable that they're going to get renewed, but maybe they get a half point difference because their financial performance is truly measured right instead of just avoiding taxes. So unless there's a tax rate change going on, like in other words, if Trump would have lost and we had another tax regime, then maybe they would have went the other way. So therefore, the effective tax rate was going to go up. Then we want to play the rate game and income and deductions and accelerate income. And so outside of that, our effective tax rate for most of our clients are pretty low compared to what they've historically paid. And so what you're referring to is timing differences, and timing differences aren't winning. And in particular, if they cost you more interest rate or your ability to leverage, we're not a fan. And so we fight that. We still have a lot of clients that play those games as well. And if you're a single point dealer, or a dealer is not growing, is pretty consistent and has high liquidity, and you can make the argument then it's just about taxes.
So you touched on financing earlier, especially with that example with a smaller store in a smaller market. And I know just in our conversation, you recognized or pointed out some banking changes. What are you seeing right now? I mean, we know financing is getting a little bit more difficult. I'd love your perspective on that.
Well, I tell everybody that the transaction market has slowed down, at least at our firm, the first 6 months of the year. And what has kept us busy is lending inquiries. And so obviously loan covenants and things like that in certain stores. I mean, if you just bought a Chrysler store probably 2 or 3 years ago, you paid a lot of money for it. It's no longer hitting the debt service ratio. And so there's a rash of those stores and those deals out there. And so when you blow loan covenants, it brings in a lot of questions and working on plans to get things fixed. So that has certainly kept us busy, and that's not the fun work that you want to do, but you want to be able to avoid that. And so having your clients plan, and can you show more income on the statements? Can you bring in F&I income? And so those things we're coaching with our clients to make sure we avoid these discussions. But if you're a prospective buyer and you're looking to buy a store and go to a bank, and why this has impacted you, and you have banks who now have loans that aren't meeting standard loan covenants, credit gets more involved. And so it makes it harder on everybody to go out and buy and leverage stores to what they may have been able to use to. So, you know, with that being the case, and I know it's tough on you guys because you're trying to represent your clients and get the right buyer in place to buy the store, and you have to assume that they're going to be able to get the financing they need or expect to be able to pull this off. And it's been years since we've had to worry about that, right? It's probably good. Over the last 5 years, you probably haven't had anybody or very few that have not been able to execute on a transaction because of financing. I think we're going to see some of that. We're going to see people that are good dealers and they're solid performers, but they have some underperforming stores. So they're going to struggle to get the financing that they want. It's not that they won't be able to get financing, and they're going to walk away from transactions. And so it goes back to that planning comment. If you're the dealer who's trying to buy, have conversations with your lenders, get a plan of what you can and can't do. You want to plan ahead of time not to break these loan covenants. But if you are, making sure you're ahead of the game and communicating with them what you're going to do to change. As part of being a successful dealer in these days, in particular, if you've got stores or new acquisitions that aren't turned around or aren't performing yet.
Yeah, great point. We've had a few first-time buyers in the last, six, 7 months that have actually got approved from the manufacturer, but we can't get them a floor plan provider because it's a smaller town and maybe the store has been losing a little bit of money. And frankly, we can't find a floor plan provider. And I don't know if you're seeing this, but a lot of floor plan providers now are saying that they want a minimum of $5 million floor plan. Are you seeing that? Or
yes. And it goes back to when they all have underperforming loans right now, right? And so now credit is involved. And because you have some people who aren't hitting their targets, everybody gets punished. We're definitely seeing that. And I'm a guy who's prided myself on not getting a no, but it happens. And we work through those as well. And the first-time buyers are always harder anyway. And I think, unfortunately, they're getting penalized a little more because some of those guys or gals are great operators. And so if they get the right opportunity, they're going to be successful. And the bank that jumps in with them is hopefully going to be remembered, and it's going to be a great partnership. And so, but it is, like I said, I spend half my time these days working with banks on being proactive with plan or dealing with loan covenant issues.
Good to know. And on a lighter topic, because you mentioned not fun work, what is your most fun work?
Everybody likes to buy, right? You know, when you're helping somebody grow and achieve their goals, it's obviously rewarding. And then you see them do well with those stores. And, you know, there's always a few as accountants because we're always negative, or maybe we can be negative Nancy's. And there's some we say don't buy and they perform well and we still get made fun of. And so, but those are the things that you enjoy doing. You know, working with somebody who is in financial distress is not fun. And for me, as my career really took off in 2008 and 9, because I was, for whatever reason, I worked with a lot of guys who bought stores who had debt, and working with the banks and trying to come up with plans of action to make sure that the dealer was going to be happy and successful and the banks were being taken care of. And I don't think we're going there. That's not going to be where we're heading. But we've had this little hiccup with some unknowns with the political environment and tariffs, and we've been on a high. And so I think we've had this cooling off period, and I think things will stabilize. So I don't want to paint a picture that I think is going there, but I do think dealers, we're trying to be proactive with our clients to make sure we talk about issues beforehand and fix them. Not fun, but you still got to do it.
So let's circle back to the first part of that comment, and that was you enjoy the buying side, and I totally get why. It's the fun part for sure. What are you seeing from buyers today when they look at financial statements, when they look maybe even at their own pro forma? And we tend to like buyers that look at a pro forma versus necessarily history, but obviously history is part of the purchase process. But we are seeing today a lot of buyers wanting to look at 2019, maybe look at 24, and absolutely look at the first 6 months of 25, and tend to throw out those COVID years as far as that historical data. What are you seeing? What's your experience?
As accountants, we do not like the COVID period. So that is for sure, right? So we get tuned out on occasion. But no, it's certainly, I think obviously 2019 is a good, you know, barometer to where we're at, you know, and I think that should be considered. You know, it's funny because not everybody wants to give you the 2019 statements. And so we've ran into that in that inquiry. Obviously, the first 6 months are pretty key. Obviously, trailing 12 months is probably another thing that we're penciling out. I tell my staff here, we're going back in time here where we went through this period where due diligence was a minimum, right? Due diligence was not as, has not been as heavy on these transactions. And what this dealer has historically done is not as focused on. And now we're getting back to that. So I think looking at those older dates and time and looking and doing real due diligence to make sure you're comfortable with buying with what you're getting is certainly coming back. And I don't, for me, I would probably focus on, if I was the buyer and it was my money, I'm going to focus on the first 6 months. And then I'm going to look at my current business and look at how I'm speculating. The one big surprise that I've seen, you kind of look at this globally, is if you look at the publics, they haven't really lowered their earnings expectations too much, right? They've been, and so, which is a good sign because you can, you know, whether you think they're great operators or bad operators is relevant, but what they are pretty good at is projecting out their earnings and all the people following them. And so it gives you a level of comfort that you're probably going to be okay if you're in the market to buy and to kind of work through those numbers. But as accountants and banks, they do not want to look at COVID numbers. And I think that's probably for the most part behind this. I just don't think too many, of our clients are going to include that at all anymore. And just because everybody, you know, even Toyota's earnings have changed. They've held on the longest, it seems like, but their grosses are different today than they were just 6 months ago.
So one of the things I like that you pointed out, and that is for a buyer to not just look at historical data, but also kind of do your own pro forma and look at it and go, what am I going to do with the store? And what do I do with my current group? If I've got four or five stores and I'm netting 6% on sales and 25% net on gross, I mean, do your own pro forma because maybe the expense the structure of that previous dealer isn't great, or maybe their used car ratio to new car ratio is not quite right, or maybe they're paying too much rent or all those things. So I'm glad you're pointing that out.
And I don't know what your thought on this is. Is my fear right now is real estate. I don't know if you guys are seeing this. Obviously, it's been so expensive to build, and you know, manufacturers have not certainly pulled back on their expectations, and cost of building per square foot is through the roof. And so I think real estate now is really swaying our buy or don't buy recommendation, I guess, to our clients because of real estate. And I don't see a quick fix on this.
So Travis, one of the things you mentioned a minute ago was regarding real estate and how expensive it's become, or quite frankly, new build has become. And one of the things that I'm curious on, when I was a 20 group moderator for 5 years after I sold my stores, I found that both NCM and ADA would say 8 to 10% of all the gross generated should go off and pay net rent for a volume franchise. I'm kind of wondering if they're going to now start looking at this with the increase in cost to build and if they're going to change that metric and what that looks like. What's your opinion on that?
You know, as accountants, we always look for the bad side of every transaction. And so real estate has certainly popped up on our list. And look, we're concerned. And I think real estate has certainly impacted the amount of goodwill dealers are getting and is certainly changing again with, hey, once you submit your manufacturing documents, you go through the process and you get a new demand list from the manufacturer, it's going back to a negotiation now because the cost, you know, that you're having to bear to build that new building and all those improvements is going through the roof. And as I mentioned to you earlier, that real estate appraisals have not kept up with the cost of new construction. With that being the case, dealers need to plan accordingly with what they expect the expectations of those building improvements are going to be and the time frame that they're going to be required to do that. And, you know, I always, I don't know what you guys ask for, but I always ask to try to negotiate 3 years. And I feel like once I get into a transaction, I get 3 years in, I pay down the debt. If I have to go to a building project, I'm probably okay, right? Because, you know, the old story is if you, once you get past the first 2 years of principal and interest and get into the deal, you know, the likelihood you're not going to be successful goes way down. And so those are the things we kind of work through, but the real estate side of it has impacted a few transactions that we're working on right now that I think will either be renegotiated or fallen apart.
Then I'd also comment and say for a dealer that's in an image compliant facility, that's reasonably priced compared to the amount of gross they're doing, compared to the expense structure, they're kind of in a pretty good place as far as selling your store.
For sure. Yes, sir. If you have a reasonable, if you're in a market where it's reasonable real estate cost and you're image compliant, you know, then I think, you know, there's a premium to be earned there. And I know you're probably going to argue against me with one day when I'm arguing values because I'll be representing the buyer, but I would probably deny this statement. Unfortunately, it's being recorded, so I guess I won't. But yeah, no, it's definitely worth. I mean, because look, I can tell you, even the biggest buyers we work for, real estate historically was not a big part of the equation of consideration. And now it is because of just the pure cost in the manufacturer, bigger push to have, you know, their footprint, these stores and locations.
So we touched on earlier is better when we were talking earlier in our conversation. So for dealers with kids or family in the business, what is your advice for how early they should start planning?
The hard game is speculating, if depending on the age of the kids, which ones are going to be involved in the business and which ones are going to do well. And that, I think that is the holdback. We kind of talked about earlier that, hey, it's your identity. It's your life. So those are inward things that you have to deal with as the dealer principal. But the external ones are family members and which ones are going to be involved and can be successful in the stores. And so, you know, a lot of times we're waiting on those answers, right? And it's hard to guess which ones are going to be involved. Obviously, if they're of age and you have some that are engaged in the stores and they're a key part of the success, and then it becomes a little bit easier. Then it's just the dealer working on the inward items that we talked about. But, you know, having a plan and avoiding those family disasters is kind of what we preach. In most of these markets that we work in, the dealers kind of know stories of estate planning not done and succession planning not done and families crumbling and stores being sold and they have to be sold quickly. And so you don't want to scare them into it, but you certainly share your war story to make sure they understand that, hey, look, there's a reason why we're doing this. It's not to take away the power and to come through. Make this quickly because you have the manufacturer who has a voice in what you want to do with these stores. And so it's a cumbersome process, and getting a plan early, if you can, if you have people in place or you have ideas of who's going to be, who you need to be in charge. Because one thing seems to be consistent with at least the dealers I work on, the older they get, they plan with their heart instead of their mind. And I think it's mainly men too. I think the female dealers I work with are able to keep that separate a little bit better. Some of the male dealers that I think they would have done things differently if they would have made the estate planning earlier. But I think, you know, as they get older, they get worried about making people happy. And sometimes making them happy is not the right answer for their family unit as a whole. It's one of the hardest things we do as far as ours getting into those discussions with family members and the family patriarch and letting control go, but also telling some of the kids or aunts or uncles what their future role is when upon death. And some of them aren't happy with that. And so it goes on the list of not fun work.
So let's talk about something that's going on that we're seeing quite a bit of in the last, I'd say 12 months, maybe 24 months, ROFRs, right of first refusal. We are seeing a lot more activity here. There's winners, there's losers, and certainly for the losers, it's pretty tough. But what are you seeing, and do you have any advice maybe for the buyer on how they can prevent it if it's even possible?
You know, I've been on both sides too. And it's been some sad days. Some of my worst professional days is working with our client who is the buyer, obviously, and you get that letter from Toyota or Mercedes-Benz or whoever it might be, and it's a gut punch. And so you try to avoid those. It's a state law issue, and there's no clear way of getting around those things. And I don't want to say too much on camera because I could be in court one day arguing with some of them. But your friend as the buyer is to make that document muddy. You don't want to make it so clear cut that it's very easy for somebody to step into that deal. So we have our kind of things we do internally if we're worried about this. You have to plan accordingly because the seller will ask you what's going on. And so in my mind, you've got to be ahead of the game if you're concerned. What the dealer has to recognize, and I know you guys know this, it's not personal. Sometimes it's Toyota's already made a plan for this store with somebody else, and it didn't even matter who the next guy was who signed that contract. And so it's not personal, but it's part of it. And my job, if I'm working with the buyer, is to make it where it's a little bit harder on the manufacturer to pull that trigger. But I've lost, so it's not been a slam dunk every time. But I do think there's been times where the manufacturer wanted to do it, but I think they had to read the document, ask a bunch of questions, and realize that they were going to have a legal battle on their hands and decided not to. So you need a plan. And obviously, we've been on the side where our clients have been the one who've been brought into the transaction by the manufacturer. And obviously, those are a lot more exciting. And so we can go and jump through that. And you generally have to react pretty quickly, right? And you generally have maybe 24 to 48 hours to review kind of an APA, or we have very little to no information from the prospective client or the prospective seller. And so you're doing things on the blind. But it's unfortunately that we have to deal with those things. And some of the manufacturers are much more aggressive than others. I'm sure you've seen Ford has stepped in, and Ford has actually closed a few stores, which I don't know if y'all have been a part of those. I've seen two transactions that I was involved in where Ford stepped in and actually closed a point down. They still Rofered it because they can't buy it direct. And really, in both cases, it did make sense to me because these were markets where I think they sold enough new vehicles they should still be in, but Ford has an objective on reducing point counts. And then, you know, whether it be Hyundai's been very aggressive with keeping their stores inside their current dealer body. We've seen Toyota obviously do it over the years. And some of it is minority-driven programs doing this, but sometimes it's just that, hey, they're trying to expand their current dealers. They all seem to want their dealer body to own more of their stores. And I think that's really kind of a lesson from Toyota, because I think Toyota's probably done that the best job of that early on. I think most of them are catching on that that it makes it easier when you have one guy or gal who owns five Nissan stores. He knows the programs. He knows how to sell Nissans. He's not having to come in and figure out the programs.
Yeah, I was involved with two of those before I left Toyota and came over here. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I've seen it firsthand.
Toyota has given me some good days, but also the worst days. Because in one case where it was going to be this first Toyota store, and it wasn't personal because I ended up knowing the dealer who got it on that transaction. And so it was just something that was in the works, and you're heartbroken for the guy who gets told no at the altar.
Absolutely. So this has been really insightful, Travis. Any final words or last advice for dealers out there?
I'll say this, obviously, get with your legal counsel and accounting teams, you know, and get a plan. Accountants are big on plans. I know it's sometimes not sexy things that we're talking about relative to estate planning and looking into those things. But I would say, look, be proactive. Make sure your legal team and accounting team is being proactive with you in talking about these things. And I'm hopeful that the remaining of 25 is going to be pretty solid. And I think both of us are going to be busy the 12 to 24 months.
How can people reach out to you if they have questions or just want to learn more about what you or your firm has to offer?
You know, our website is hhmcpas.com. And so they can see that stuff, the contact information and stuff we publish and those things. And so we try to be out there as much as possible as accountants get asked to do.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been great. Enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. We really enjoyed it. Thank you, Travis.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Driving Performance. The show notes include links to any resources mentioned in today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review. If you're considering buying or selling an automotive dealership, reach out to us at performancebrokerageservices.com or send an email to info@performancebrokerageservices.com.